listen to The Kevin Smith Show live each day, Monday through Friday. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com and join the universe.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates. And welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, a special welcome to you. We're glad you're here. And I hope you make a habit out of it. Some of the music that you hear on the Kevin Smith Show is provided by podshow.com. And we appreciate their tremendous service in providing music for shows just like this. If you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that, okay? Go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe. It takes about 20 seconds. That's our free weekly newsletter, and one will go out tonight, so you've got time to subscribe. Well, tonight's going to be a big, big night here. As you know, we had Michael Horn as a guest on the show talking about the Billy Meier case, and during the show, he made reference to some photo analysis that had been done by Jeff Ritzman. And surprising to me, Jeff Ritzman called in. These two gentlemen had a very gentlemanly debate, but brief, on this show. And it was brief because, you know, we don't open the phone lines until the second hour. And so Jeff Ritzman and Michael Horn did not have a great deal of time to talk to each other. Both were very gentlemanly about it, but different points of view. And so I asked them both on the air, would you be willing to come back and let's do a whole show together? And both accepted. So tonight we have, as my guests, Michael Horn and Jeff Ritzman. And really what we have is not a debate between two people, but we have two different people representing two different points of view versus, it's not Horn versus Ritzman. It's Horn and Ritzman versus the Billy Meier evidence. Two different points of view on the evidence. And so I'm expecting this to be a very informative and very in-depth show. And I think you will agree. Both of these gentlemen are very capable of presenting their points of view and doing so in a way that is interesting and informative. And they'll be joining me here in just a couple of minutes after we come back from the break that's coming up. When we do open the phone lines later and allow you to call in, please understand we're not here to insult anybody. We're not here to make personal attacks. If you have questions or comments about the evidence, go for it. That's what this is about. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with Michael Horn and Jeff Ritzman.
globe with cities that reach the sky. And it's all going to end in the blink of an eye. So frightening, you'll wish it wasn't real.
Survival is going to be everybody's priority.
The Horizon Project. Order now at thehorizonproject.com or call toll-free 866-607-8439.
Now's the perfect time to switch to Dish Network. Make the move today and get 100% digital TV for only $19.99 a month. Free two-room DVR upgrade, free high-def receiver upgrade, number one in the U.S. with 29 high-definition channels, and a free movie package for 3 months. Choose from Starz, Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Go to kevinsmithshow.com right now and click on the banner for Dish Network. You know, for quite some time, I have been talking with you about the phenomenal resort accommodations, the Bath Street Apartments, in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. Now it's time for you to see for yourself. Go to kevinsmithshow.com and click the Bath Street banner at the top of the page and see for yourself why Bath Street Apartments should be your next vacation destination. Since 9-1-1, we've all become security conscious. We want to know the people whose job it is to protect us can actually do the job. The difference between a security guard and a security professional is professional training. In Arizona, the oldest and best DPS-approved security academy is Assessed Security Enforcement Training Academy. Make sure your security staff is the best. Call Assessed at 602-997-0041. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Swayze wishing you the best for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guests this evening are on opposite sides, or maybe not opposite, but certainly different sides of the issue of the Billy Meier case. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times whenever people get together that have differing points of view, we have forgotten in this country and in many parts of the world how to just have a conversation and just present one's views, you know. And we've forgotten that lost art of here's my view, if you want to believe it, fine, and if you don't, fine, you know. Based on the conversation these two gentlemen had a week ago here on this show, it seems that both of them are quite capable of that. And what we're talking about is the Billy Meier case. The Billy Meier case is big. It's really, really big. It's one that everyone involved in ufology knows something about. And tonight, we're going, as I said, to take a look at the evidence from two different points of view. One point of view is represented by Michael Horn, who is the American representative of Billy Meier. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
And the other point of view is represented by Jeff Ritzman, who is a person who has been investigating the UFO phenomena for a number of years and is a, we'll get them to tell it in their own words in a minute, but in my words, he is an expert in photographic materials. And I would like to welcome Jeff Ritzman to the show. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Outstanding. So why don't we do this, just to get it in your own words, since I sort of, I didn't sort of. I put Michael first in the introduction. Let's take Jeff first in letting you just tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, you know, I've been in imaging for, well, almost 20 years now, and basically I was trained classically as an artist for commercial, you know, design problems. Going from there, I branched out into prop and set design, did some work for some national performers here and there, went on to do quite a bit of digital imaging work over the years, and basically I got into UFOs for more or less selfish reasons that I've had some interesting sightings of stuff here and there, and some pretty odd experiences throughout my life. So that kind of got me interested in UFOs to start with, and then I started applying my profession essentially to what I could do to help out in investigating cases, which ultimately brought me around to the Billy Meier case, because there's such a vast amount of data to go through. And that's pretty much how I got involved.
Okay, and Michael, let's turn to you now for your background.
Sure, I'm sorry. I'm getting an echo on this phone, so I'll just talk over it, and you guys hear me without an echo, don't you?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. In 1979, I walked into a bookstore in Los Angeles, and I saw the first photo book put out by Genesis 3 Publications, and that photo book had a good number of the now very famous Billy Meier photos. It had some texts in there as well. It had a little bit of a report on the investigation, including information a little bit on the witnesses, people who had taken lie detector tests. There was an overview of some of the information on the testing of the metal alloy samples, and there was also some photographs that were showing apparently some energy patterns around the ships and things like that. But it wasn't until 1986 that I was able to get a hold of a significantly greater volume of information, which was in the form of the first early translations of what are called the contact notes or contact reports, which are the purported conversations transcribed by Meier that were between him and 1, 2, 3 different extraterrestrial people, alleged extraterrestrial people at the time. And what was maybe a couple of months of reading for me, partially because the translations were done by someone who was fluent in German but not so fluent in English, and the sentence structure was weird. The value of reading that material in 1986 didn't come home to me until 2 years later. I happened to open a newspaper and see a report of a new scientific discovery pertaining to A-bomb testing and ozone damage, and with specific percentage, et cetera, et cetera. But when I looked at it, I thought to myself, this isn't new information to me. I know this information, but from where? So it was at that point that I reached under the bed and found a volume of these transcripts from Meier that I'd received 2 years prior, and there in a transcript from 1975, 13 years earlier than the time I was reading the document, Meier was talking about this in the discussion with one of these people, and the information was given to him. It coincided almost exactly with the information that was reported as a new discovery in 88, but also Meier referred to an earlier 1951 conversation, and indeed we finally had that document and put up on the website. So without taking all the time to explain it, it was the scientifically prophetically accurate information that really captured my attention, and of course the UFO photos, films, and videos, etc. too.
Okay, now let me pause just a moment to say for everyone who's listening, because people listen from different venues, if you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and just scroll down that first page, you'll see where it says Friday Show. And you'll see a couple of little paragraphs there about Michael Horn and Jeff Ritzman. Now, each of those gentlemen has a link right there under their paragraphs. So as we talk about photographs, as we talk about various other materials, you can click those links to see what they're talking about. And we invite you to do that. Again, that's kevinsmithshow.com. Whenever we had to, we came to the end of the show, and we had to stop last week, we were just getting to some good stuff, and the good stuff being each of you explaining your differing points of view. I would assume, Michael, that your point of view is that the Billy Meyer material is credible. And I would assume, Jeff, that your point of view is that it is not credible. Am I right so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, from my side of things, I guess I'm going to be a little bit of a different dissenting view than most people would be as far as this case goes. I don't really think that it is for anybody really to say that Billy Meyer has never had a UFO experience. He may well have. My own look into this case has pretty much convinced me that the photos, by and large, that we're looking at in regard to the case, I don't find to be particularly credible.
Okay, so your position would be strictly, your position on credibility would strictly be regarding the photographs.
Well, I think the sound recording, you know, the prediction or prophecies that are listed, I have some serious issues with, only because I've read a little bit on the net from some people who have looked into those claims and have found them to be, you know, sorely lacking in real credibility as far as being an accurate prediction or a prediction at all. So I go across the board with it, but moreover, I don't find the photographs to be particularly credible, and therefore, to me, that mainly casts doubt on a lot more of the case than just that alone.
Okay. I think we've got time to do, in fact, I know we do. Let's give each of you 5 minutes to sort of introduce to us your point of view and kind of summarize for us your point of view on the whole Billy Meyer case. Take 5 minutes. When we get to the end of 5 minutes, I'll have to stop you and give the other guy a chance. And then we'll come back and sort of start discussing those points of view. So, Michael, you're first.
Okay. I guess I could start off for you. I have found through more than 27 years of researching into all available information, at least that I could find in English, and even some in German, that the Meyer case is virtually impeccable. What we'll probably discover tonight as we go through our comparisons is that there are claims that Meyer's photographs were hoaxed. We will be able to see, Jeff will make his case, and I'll be happy to make mine, but we're going to discover something. We're going to discover that at no time did either Jeff, as one of the skeptics claiming to be able to duplicate the photographs or show that they're hoaxed, did he ever actually do that? And while we're going to do that more specifically, probably online for everyone, I will give you a couple of things to look for. We will see that on a page that I have up that there are a number of photographs in which Meyer has the UFO circling a tree, next to a tree, etc. There are no such photographs by any of the people, and there have been not only Jeff, but a couple other people have attempted to duplicate Meyer's photos. They always avoid those because if the trees in Meyer's photos are real, it means that the objects are not models. It means that the objects are full-sized. If the objects are full-sized, it means that Meyer's been telling the truth all along. Now, I'll jump actually to one of the lead weights in the whole thing that establishes that credibility, apart from the fact that you will not see one photo by any skeptic that can duplicate those shots of Meyer's, nor will you see one film or video. You will also find out that James Dierdorf, who's an investigator on the case and on a document in the case, went to the trouble a couple of years ago to submit several different photographs of Meyer's where the UFOs are shown next to the trees to 6 different forestry experts. In showing those photos to the forestry experts, Mr. Dierdorf, Professor Dierdorf, said, "Don't worry about the object. Is that a miniature or a model tree, or is it a full-size tree?" Now this, I'm going to hammer away at this all night, so you better get used to hearing it. 6 professors of forestry unanimously agreed that all of the trees in all of those photos are full-size, mature trees, not miniatures, anywhere from 20 to 50 feet tall. That means conclusively that those are real and large objects, unless Meyer had Photoshop, was pasting things over so skillfully that he should be working in Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. We know that none of that is the case. As a matter of fact, we have, in a book that is sitting in front of me from 1982, we have Wendell Stevens describing how they had an 18-inch in diameter model made and photographed next to those trees, wherever they could in other places, and fed photographs into computers and analyzed them, and every single time they could discern the difference. One of the things we'll notice tonight when we see Jeff's photos is they're very clear. The branches and the model UFO he photographed are virtually the same level of clarity because it was a small object close to the trees and close to the camera. In Meyer's case, when you look at his photos with the exception of the one that was enhanced deliberately for detail, you'll find that since his camera was set generally at infinity, that the ship was clearer and the objects in the foreground were blurred as they should be if it was a real large object a distance from the camera. You're going to find that scientific experts, from an astrophysicist who's been in the air defense industry for well over 30 years now, to Marcel Vogel, who held or co-held 32 patents at IBM, have all authenticated Meyer's evidence. And so we're left with the only possible conclusion, and that is that Meyer is a one-armed man with above-genius-level skills in photography, filmmaking, videography, model-making, digital effects, special effects, metallurgy, sound recording, sound engineering, mass hypnosis, clairaudience, clairvoyance, geology, topography, map-making, and probably two more dozen specialties with one hand while he lived in Switzerland raising a family of three while renovating a rundown farmhouse in a little village that still to this day has 16 houses. Since none of these skeptics have ever gone and met either Meyer, the people involved, the five other photographers of the craft, the 120 witnesses, I'm going to be very interested to see how, with confidence, taking all of these things into consideration, they will say that Meyer is this genius who has fooled the world for 60 years, as opposed to his being a genuine contactee who's taken well over 1,200 authentic photos, 8 films, a video, 3 different sound recordings that were found to be irreproducible in sound recording labs, the best labs in the country.
Okay, Michael, time's up. We're going to have to move on. And, Jeff, it's your turn.
Well, how do you follow that, you know? Well, basically, I'll put it to you in the simplest terms that I can. I believe a lot of times that things tend to get overanalyzed a bit, not just with this case, but with a lot of cases. And when you really come down to the actual people involved with the case, the dynamics of the case and how the information was actually brought forth, and in particular the quote-unquote expert testimony that's presented on Michael's site and throughout the Meyer, you know, history here, you kind of have to really take it upon yourself to actually make the calls, to get on the phone, and to speak with these people about what they're quoted as. Within the material, and you find out that a lot of these people that you can contact have a much different view of what they actually believe about the case or disbelieve about the case, and you find out that a lot of times that their quotes are taken out of context in order to put forth a positive view or a positive spin on the case. Dr. Michael Malin is one of the people that is quoted on the site, you know, saying essentially, you know, that this is one of the supportive people that is mentioned. I actually got a hold of Dr. Malin through one of his colleagues at MSS.S.com, which is Malin Space Science Systems, a business that he owns. And I indicated to him, you know, I pointed him towards the direction of the quote from Michael's site that essentially shows a support of the case and the photographs. He wrote back to me and said that he feels that his quote was referenced completely out of context. His one quote here, which really makes me laugh, is, "Who cares if some nut in Switzerland can make good fakes?" So, you know, this is the kind of thing that you find out when you start talking to people who are mentioned in the case, that they simply don't fit into the context that is put forth by the Meyer folks in being a supportive comment. It's actually quite the reverse. A lot of people are misquoted. As far as the photographs themselves, I have not been to Switzerland. However, you can note it this way. Jim Delatoso, who did the original analysis of the photos, didn't go to Switzerland either. So I really don't think that that's really that's particularly a necessary thing to do when you're looking at these photographs in order to look at it from a photographic standpoint or a distance standpoint. And I'm assuming that at some point in the show, Kevin, we're going to go through the photos that I sent you. Because I have some things to point out about those.
Yes, we are.
Yeah,
But in fairness, we're going to give Michael the opportunity to go through the photos that he has as well.
Sure. But, I mean, as far as the whole of the case, you know, you talk about the original investigators on the case, you know, Lee and Britt Elders, number one. People have to realize that, these folks owned the production company and the publishing company, Intercept and Genesis 3 Publishing, which published all of Meyer's books, his video documentaries, and so on and so forth. So they had a great deal to gain from the case being legitimate. Wendell Stevens, being a UFO investigator who invested the case, I think he's listed as a chief investigator on the case. There are people that have said that they have asked him why he was promoting, quote-unquote, a fake case instead of exposing it. And they said that he's commented that because promoting it makes more money than exposing it. Wendell's done a lot of lectures, you know, on the case.
We have to cut you off at that point.
Sure.
And, Michael?
I would like to address that.
Well, I was going to tell you, but we're going to let you address that. In fact, we're going to go point by point and let each of you say what you want to say. The other one can offer a rebuttal and an explanation, and we're going to do all of that. But what I'd like to do is wait till we come back from the break that's coming up here in a couple of minutes for us to get into that, because I don't want to get started and have to go to a break. And so we've got, in about a minute and a half, we have a break coming up. What I'd like to do at this point, one announcement I need to make that I didn't make, is that we are aware of the fact that, and we are aware of why, that sometimes if you're listening via OmniSound Radio Network, sometimes here the past couple of days, the audio drops out. We know exactly why. Okay, that's all I can say about it right now. But if that happens to you, you can always go to ghostradiox.net, ghostradiox.net, and that will not drop out. Okay, that's on a different feed. All right, now I think all of us can see that the differences between your positions are rather decisive differences, well-defined differences, and I would say rather deep differences leading to two different conclusions. When we come back, I would like for us to get into all of these differences. Each of you can say what you want to say about the evidence and about the witnesses on your side, and the other has an opportunity then to rebut. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes and continue with a look at the evidence in the Meyer case. Michael Horn and Jeff Ritzman have joined us to bring their points of view. We'll be back right after this.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Now Now's the perfect time to switch to Dish Network. Make the move today and get 100% digital TV for only $19.99 a month. Free two-room DVR upgrade, free high-def receiver upgrade, number one in the U.S. with 29 high-definition channels, and a free movie package for 3 months. Choose from Starz, Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Go to KevinSmithShow.com right now and click on the banner for Dish Network. Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
We must inform you that Kevin Smith has lost his mind. Business owners and advertising executives take advantage of Kevin's temporary nutty frame of mind. He is willing to invest $2,550 in you to introduce you to the very high value of advertising on The Kevin Smith Show. For details, email advertising@kevinsmithshow.com and just say, "Send me the package." We think he's gone nuts, but why not benefit from it?
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we've done our introductions. Now it's time to rock and roll. Let's go back to just remind us of the gist of what you said right at the end, Jeff, where you were talking about witnesses that say they didn't say what they were reported to have said.
Right, that's in the way of the expert testimonies that are listed, and I can real quickly go through this. David Fronig is listed, and he would be the astronautical engineer at McDonnell Douglas. Now, him, I haven't really been able to get a hold of whether or not he is even still around. But there is a, if you read this statement, the interesting thing is that he pointed out that he was startled that there was a 20% difference. Essentially in the quantum ramjet drive plus hypothetical tachyon drive that his and his group was studying. The thing is what Meyer told him was a 20% difference in a time frame of traveling from one place to another. You know, when I look at something like that, you actually have to read between the lines and note that Fernick's calculations were based on many arbitrary assumptions. And it's even written in there. It in no way proves the truthfulness of Meyer's account, since it was a theoretical system he was working on. You can go from that and just it's admittedly based on an arbitrary and hypothetical assumption. So really, does it mean anything? I don't particularly find that to be that compelling. When you look at Robert Post, I think we covered Robert Post a little bit on the last show.
Let me ask you a question before you go on. Are you hearing an echo?
I'm sorry?
Are you hearing an echo?
Yeah, my own voice, actually.
I have no idea why. I would do something about it for you, but I just don't know why.
Well, Kevin, if I keep talking, it's not so bad, really.
All right, go ahead.
Kevin, may I just ask something? This is Michael.
Yes.
Jeff did do a laundry list just a moment ago, and before we forget what he said, I don't have any objection to him going through all this stuff, but I'd like to address the things that he raised right before the break.
Okay. Let's do that.
All right.
And we'll come back, and I'm sure that Jeff will have some more.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, part of what troubles me about a lot of the skeptics, and Jeff is into it already here, is what I call character assassination with vague and unnamed accusers. And we'll hear more of that about someone that said that Wendell said something. That's totally inadmissible.
I'll have his name if you'd like to know it.
Well, that's fine, but it's a very third-party type of a claim that we know nothing about the credibility of the person. But let me move on here through each one of these. You mentioned Michael Mallon, and you said that he made a different statement. As you should know, and anybody who's read the Gary Kinder book and letter, Gary Kinder was required and did submit in writing to each of the people who are quoted in this letter and in his book exactly what they said, and he said to them, please either correct it, deny it, or what have you, or sign off. Michael Mallon signed off on his statement. It is not a surprise to me that in this day and age, with the competition for funding and credibility and all the rest of it, that scientists, first of all, don't want to say anything about a UFO case, and that those that might have would like to even distance themselves from it. But he certainly, in his statement, as Jeff reported, did not really say, I never said that. Michael Mallon did say what he said, and what we quote him as saying. And just for, you know, for the record here, Michael Mallon said, among other things, let's see, we've got it here, I find the photographs themselves credible. They're good photographs. They appear to represent a real phenomenon. The story that some farmer in Switzerland is on a first-name basis with dozens of aliens who come to visit him, I find that incredible. But I find the photographs more credible. They're reasonable evidence of something. What that something is, I don't know. And Mallon also said, if the photographs are hoaxes, then I am intrigued by the quality of the hoax. How did he do it? I'm always interested in seeing a master at work. And then we had Jeff criticize Jim Dellatoso. People will find when they go to the page that I have put up, at the bottom of it, Jim Dellatoso is referred to by Wendell Stevens, I'm not even looking at the page and I remember it, as a guy of outstanding abilities in a variety of sciences who never went to get the one degree because he wanted to attain excellence in a whole number of fields. Now, you can argue with that, but he does have a phenomenally good record, and he was entrusted with doing a lot of the photo analysis. As far as Lee Elders and Britt Elders, and I take particular exception to the very slimy thing that Jeff said about them, well, they were effectively saying, well, they're out to make money on it. What Jeff doesn't know is that starting back in about 1977 or 78, the Elders put up $100,000 of their own money for the investigation. Not to put out product, to investigate. They paid for photo analysis. They paid for sound analysis. They paid for everything to be done. They went to Switzerland as skeptics. They were there basically to protect Wendell Stevens, their friend, so that he wouldn't be taken in, quote-unquote, by a UFO hoax. I spoke to Lee Elders not 10 days ago, and I can tell you that Lee and his wife had to move out of Phoenix because the UFO community itself was attacking them for promoting the Meyer case. Before anybody start slandering Lee Elders out of hearsay, they should call Lee Elders up and find out exactly what his own experiences were. Yes, they put out that material, and as far as I know, in America, there is no crime in publishing any of your findings, any material, any information that you're doing on your own dime, and to think in any way, shape, or form that that is discrediting to the case or to people is an insult to everybody's intelligence. And Wendell Stevens, to have some third party make a slanderous, stupid statement about him in the context of a conversation where we're trying to establish the credibility of evidence is beneath anybody. And I would think it would be beneath Jeff. And since he brought up David Froning, allow me to say that David Froning came to my presentation at the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles 12 or 15 years ago, and he happened to have made the statement. My colleagues and I may have made breakthroughs in our understanding of possibilities and ways for traveling faster than light from Billy Meyer's accounts of his encounters with the Pleiarians. Now, I should also add to that that, yes, David Froning is an astronautical engineer, and David Froning said that whoever is advising Meyer is very knowledgeable, and the fact that we are having a conversation where we want to nitpick David Froning's 20% because he was amazed. It wasn't that it was a wrong statement. He was amazed that the calculation was within the 20%, and we're talking about a Swiss farmer who was speaking about tachyon propulsion systems in 1975 when none of us knew what the heck a tachyon was, and we probably still don't. But Meyer published information about it, and it caught the attention of an astronautical engineer at McDonnell Douglas, and you want to try to nitpick that and make it a negative on the case? Do your best. I don't think it speaks well for your credibility. I'd say stand up for your
Michael,
photographs.
Michael, Let's stay with the evidence. No personal attacks. Now,
then
here's the deal.
Let's not have them on people like this. I know these investigators. Well, I've known Lee Elders for 20 years.
Well, look, you know, it doesn't matter to me or to the audience if you know President Bush. What does matter is if he's heard these things, if he's seen these things, then he should bring them forward and let's examine them. Don't you agree?
I agree. If you have evidence, you should bring it forward if you have something that's germane. But to get into character assassination, especially with someone who doesn't know any of the principles in the case and has to totally rely on third-person hearsay, is terrible. I know Froning. I know Lee. I know Britt. I know Wendell. I know Meyer. I know 25 other people in Switzerland. I've interviewed these people.
Well, yeah, but Michael, look, when you tell us, I mean, just in fairness now, when you tell us that someone that you name has made this statement or made that statement, you present your evidence for it. That's not an attack on Jeff. And when he says somebody that told him something, that's not an attack on you.
Well, it's an attack for the statements. Look, if we're making statements about an investigation that has been documented now for 25, almost 30 years, I'm reporting the documentation. I can do that. I can say, these are the people who did the documentation. If the best somebody can do is to say, well, I heard this guy is in it for the money, that doesn't address the credibility of the... Anybody can slander anybody. I've never said that Jeff is into his position for the money. I could say that and we could go off on a tangent, but that's not germane to the evidence.
Okay, well, let's get Jeff's comment on this.
Good.
Jeff?
Well, you know, let's put it this way. I've long been called morally bankrupt, a liar, a fraud. I'm sure I'm leaving some out that Michael and the Meyer folks have ended up calling me over the years. But to get back to Lee and Britt, let's look at that in depth right now. They have published books. Wendell as well has published books dealing with the Meyer case. Those books have been for sale. The bottom line is that when you turn a case into a product, you are gleaning money from that. I don't care how much you may have invested. The bottom line is you are selling a case. Anytime you sell a case or you accept money in order to do that research on a case from whomever, or you invest money in a case, you have a vested interest in that case being true. Okay. Back
well,
in
now,
the,
wait a minute. Let's talk. Hang on just a second. Hang on. I have money invested in doing this show. And we're talking about the Billy Meyer case. Would that mean, by your definition, that I have a vested interest in the Billy Meyer case?
That kind of standpoint of that framework. What we've got is it's okay to sell books. It's okay to do lectures and put this forth. The bottom line is that when you turn a case into a product, you immediately have a vested interest in that case being legitimate. You're presenting the data. The data is being presented as this is a real thing. And the bottom line is that when I have made calls to these people, or I've sent mail to these people, and I get back, you know, statements like I got from Dr. Mallon and from what I've seen here about Robert Post and others that have chimed in on this over the time, you find out that Mallon has flatly told me that his comments were taken out of context and that essentially that... You know, his statement to me, essentially, let's look at it from the standpoint of how it's being presented on Mr. Horn's site. You know, in essence, is he really saying that the photographs are authentic? No. He's simply saying, you know, I'm intrigued with the quality of the hoax. How did he do it? Okay, that's not giving any kind of authentication as to the legitimacy of the photographs whatsoever. That's correct. Yeah, sure. But the statement isn't saying anything as to the authenticity of the photographs. He has pretty much said to me, quote, it really doesn't matter whether they're real or not. He says, if they're real, the occupants don't want to have any substantial contact with us and certainly not offering me a lift to Mars. To which he adds a little winky smile to it. He says, you know, who cares if some nut in Switzerland can make good fakes? That's his last statement to me.
Let's let Michael respond to that.
Jeff made a very strange comment about people that sold product. May I remind Jeff that in all sorts of fields in the world, when people debunk something, or when they're pro something, or when they investigate and publish their findings, there is no blanket assumption of a venal motive. People have are entitled in this world to publish and make available their findings, their research, and we are free to not purchase it. We're free to disagree or agree with it. We're free to even do our own investigating to find out whether or not what they're saying is true. So I'd like to take out of this equation this stigma that is a totally illogical and amateurish thing to say, that because the elders who invested their own money published their findings, published the results of their investigation, we've got the government publishing their investigations and their reports and selling them on everything from 9/11 to the latest hearings and all that. And nobody's accusing the government of making money off of publishing their findings. Let's take that one out of the equation, because it's nonsensical. And Michael Mallon, when you're just trying to spin it one way, as Kevin just said, Michael Mallon signed off on this, and even when you're trying to say that he didn't authenticate the photographs as if he made a negative, he says here exactly, they're reasonable evidence of something. I find them credible. I mean, what is the guy supposed to do? He also says, if the photographs are hoaxes, then I'm intrigued by the quality of the hoax. How did he do it? He certainly hasn't said in this statement, because if Michael Mallon thinks that he was quoted out of context, Michael Mallon, starting back in 1980, whenever this book was published, could have sued the publisher Atlantic Monthly and Gary Kinder, but he never has, and neither has anyone else. I'm going to ask here that instead of, if you're going to try to now say that all these people were lying and misrepresenting, it's not as valid. I say go ahead. You've claimed that you have duplicated Meyer's photos, and you claim that you can show that his photos are hoaxes.
All right, I hate to do it, but we got to take a break. It gets interesting, doesn't it? And we'll pick up right here when we get to the other side of the break. So don't go away, folks. Settle for nothing but the best. iPowerWeb. You're hearing me now because I use iPowerWeb. Click the iPowerWeb banner on KevinSmithShow.com, and trust me, there is not a better web host on the planet. Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com. Now's the perfect time to switch to Dish Network. Make the move today and get 100% digital TV for only $19.99 a month. Free two-room DVR upgrade, free high-def receiver upgrade, number one in the U.S. with 29 high-definition channels, and free movie package for 3 months. Choose from Starz, Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Go to KevinSmithShow.com right now and click on the banner for Dish Network. Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today. Since 9-1-1, we've all become security conscious. We want to know the people whose job it is to protect us can actually do the job. The difference between a security guard and a security professional is professional training. In Arizona, the oldest and best DPS-approved security academy is Assessed Security Enforcement Training Academy. Make sure your security staff is the best. Call Assessed at 602-997-0041. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening are Michael Horn, the American representative for Billy Meier, and Jeff Ritzman, who is a UFO investigator, and he is trained in photography and graphics and things like that. And he is taking the other point of view from Michael. Michael's point of view is that the Billy Meier case is credible. And Jeff's point of view is that at least the photographic evidence he finds not credible. Gentlemen, we were talking about this statement by Billy Meier. And, you know, when I hear the statement, and I have seen that statement, by the way, not by Billy Meier, but by Malin. I've seen that statement, and we've heard it here tonight. I don't hear him saying, first of all, that, wow, this is the real deal, these are extraterrestrial craft. I don't hear him say that. What I do hear is these photographs are really phenomenal quality. And, you know, I don't know how to hoax those. And if this guy is hoaxing them, I'd like to know how. Now, let me ask before we proceed, can we agree on that?
Oh, that sounds about right to me.
What about you, Michael?
That was Michael.
Oh, that was Michael. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I have to go back to what Dr. Marilyn had said to me in the email here, and it says, essentially, this is from the gentleman that I spoke to at his corporation. He says, Dr. Marilyn indicated to me that he feels the quote referenced above was out of context. Now, did he sign off on a statement? Absolutely. What part of the statement is being published? All of it? None of it? I don't know. This is the thrust of his comment was that if the images were fake, they were well done fakes, but he could not tell if they were fake or not from the digitized versions of the images he saw, which again is kind of consistent to what Robert Post had mentioned as well, in that he was shown lithographs and not photographs to look at. When he later saw the photos, which were a lot fuzzier than the lithographs he was shown, he later said that he believed Meier might have been a quote-unquote con man and wanted nothing to do with any of it.
Let me get you to do this for us. Explain for the audience the difference between a photograph and a lithograph.
Okay, a photograph is actually from print negative, and that's essentially just exposed paper with a negative, just like you'd get any photograph from your photo HUD or Ritz camera or what have you. A lithograph is actually a scan photograph that's then broken down into probably a moire pattern to do a lithograph print from. A lithograph print is completely 100% worthless for any sort of analysis because it is so far removed from the actual print itself. So that was what was submitted to Robert Post. Now, how many more of these people on this list, what were they shown? Were they shown negatives? Were they shown the slide positives? Were they shown actual prints of negatives, or were they all shown lithographs?
Why don't you get the book Light Years and find out? Let me just throw something in here about Michael Malin one more time. You just read a statement that you didn't really attribute to Malin. You said it came from someone who said Malin said those things. And even
right, I talked to someone directly at his side, and on the quote that is quoted from him is what I read in the first part.
What I'm trying to point out here is the difference in an investigation when you document and when you have to go through the process of really assuring legally that you're getting what a person is saying. Now, I don't frankly have a problem with what Michael Malin said because he doesn't refute really what he said. But the difference is that, I mean, apart from the fact that you're reporting, well, you know, it was taken out of context, if Michael Malin had a problem with that, he would have sued Atlantic Monthly. It's, at this point, we can go back and forth on Michael Malin, and to do so is only to give credit to the Meier case. Why? Because when you have people of that level who are giving credence and saying, I find the photographs themselves credible, they're good photographs, they appear to represent a real phenomenon, and that these people cannot do these photographs, but a one-armed farmer in Switzerland in the middle of nowhere can do them, then a thinking person says, well, wait a minute. how is this even up for consideration? That in 1964 and 1975 and all of this, that this man is taking photographs that are that compelling that there's even a controversy about it. Nobody else today is taking photographs of this quality, and this is over 30 years later. So I say, why don't we get to, before the show is done, let's get to the nitty-gritty with your own photographs and your attack on Myers, and I'll address and rebut it.
Sure, let's do it.
Let's do that. Let's just get to the photographs. Let me remind the audience, you can take a look at the photographs. There's a link on my site. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com and scroll down the page till you see you'll see a couple of little paragraphs there about each of these men. And I guess, Jeff, if we're going to talk about your photographs, they
yeah,
need
let's
to click...
let's go top to bottom with those.
Okay.
The very top part you're going to see is a... And I can't take credit for this. This is the Turkey UFO webpage that I found years ago. They are since gone. I can't even find them anymore. But I did manage to snag this a long time ago, and this is a shot of the wedding cake craft, it's called. And what they're showing you there is a breakdown of some found parts. The upper left textured piece is, as I'm told, is a decorative pan, cake pan, flat pan, edging. It is some sort of a plastic. And then, of course, the gold protrusions that you're seeing are your standard twist-to-lock luggage clasps or purse clasps, if you want to call them that, that are sticking out. And those are two pretty good comparisons of what you're looking at as far as the scale of what I believe is a model here. And you can see that, you know, your colors are matching you've got a space there. If you look on the actual model shot, you can see that the clasp is towards the upper end of the hole that it protrudes from. And if you look in the upper part of that, you'll see that, of course, they've got it upside down there, but there is the same distance of protrusion from the top to the bottom. And I think that's a pretty compelling look at that. You know, if we go down a shot, this is a shot on the bottom that Meyer took in 75. And there's a really important point that I want to go over here briefly that is tantamount to what I'm showing here as far as the comparison shots. If you look in Meyer's photograph, you will notice that you have some trees towards the foreground and you have some trees towards the background. Those background trees, if you look at the darkest point in those trees, the darkest black. Now compare that black to the black that is the closest trees. Okay, and you'll notice that the darkness in the back trees is lighter than the black in the closer trees. You follow me on that, Kevin?
I understand what you're saying. My eyes don't see it yet.
Okay, if you look towards the back trees, you're going to see dark areas in those trees.
All right.
Now look at the darkness of the trees. You know, there's a big hole in the trees right towards the foreground.
Yes.
And if you look at those comparative darknesses, you're seeing a much darker set of trees, and the overall darkness is darker towards the camera.
Yes.
Okay. What you're getting there, and that distance between the first set of trees to the rear trees, is called distance hazing. It's atmospheric. Okay. When you look at the disc itself in the darkness that it has, It does not match the darkness of the close trees, nor does it match the darkness of the back trees. You're seeing a darkness that is very black and is probably even closer to you than those farthest trees. That much we can establish, that it is much, much closer.
All right, we'll continue with this when we come back from the break. And don't go away, folks. If you haven't brought up the webpage yet, be sure you do. KevinSmithShow.com. And under Jeff's paragraphs is a link to the page we're looking at. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about Billy Myers' case. Thank you.
settle for nothing but the best. iPowerWeb. You're hearing me now because I use iPowerWeb. Click the iPowerWeb banner on KevinSmithShow.com and trust me, there is not a better web host on the planet. Now's the perfect time to switch to Dish Network. Make the move today and get 100% digital TV for only $19.99 a month. Free two-room DVR upgrade, free high-def receiver upgrade, number one in the U.S. with 29 high-definition channels, and a free movie package for 3 months. Choose from Starz, Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Go to KevinSmithShow.com right now and click on the banner for Dish Network. Yeah, Josh.
You're talking about if the aliens are indifferent or not?
Yeah.
This is going to sound really off the wall.
Okay.
And I'm kind of thinking about if these things...
You have 1 minute, and that's the end of the show. There's nothing I can do about it.
Okay. If they're living, and they can live, and they can die...
Mm-hmm.
If they come at you and abduct you, or anything like that, as crazy as this might sound, try to fend yourself off one, kill it, and if they're still around... As crazy as it might sound, eat it, and they'll leave you alone. If they're living and they're animals, eat it. I'm being serious.
Oh, my God. I don't know. Thanks, Josh. I don't know if I could stand the thought.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Hello, this is Robert Stack of Unsolved Mysteries, wishing you the best for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
To the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We are in the middle of a very interesting show with two guests. And I want to say that I really appreciate both of these men for taking the time to be with us tonight and present their points of view. One is Michael Horn. And the other is Jeff Ritzman. And in the interest of time, let's get right back to it. Jeff is explaining the photographs that are on the page that I've put on my site. He sent me these photographs, and I've put a link to them on my site. Now, we were talking about this beam ship shot.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, I've got a question about this. Now, the
sure.
There's two photographs there. The upper
correct.
One says duplicated Meyer beam ship and
yes.
is copyrighted by you. The other is a photograph taken by Meyer.
Correct.
And that's copyrighted by a Canadian group.
No, it's a Swiss group, actually.
Oh, is it a Swiss
that's
group?
That's actually a Swiss group.
Okay.
Right.
The first question that comes to my mind is, what are we looking at in that duplicated picture? Is that a hoax that you've done?
Exactly. That's a small model, probably about 3 inches across, that was suspended. Actually, there's some trees. You can see just in the upper right corner, there's a tree branch there. There's actually a tree right above me that is the hanging point for that model, and that model is strictly hanging there by a piece of monofilament. Open the depth of field view up, and you kind of get that distance look to it. And the point I was making before the break is essentially that in no model shot ever taken, really, has there been a definitive distance hazing of the object itself. And you can see in Meyer's shot, you can see in my shot, there is no atmospheric distance hazing. The black levels in Meyer's disc and my disc are virtually identical. And looking at the amount of haze in the back trees versus the forward trees in the Meyer shot, you can tell there's definitely some atmospheric hazing going on there. We don't see that in that disc, and my contention is, and my opinion is that we're looking at a model that is roughly the same size, perhaps a little bit larger in Meyer's shot than my own. But you're looking at essentially what boils down to a small model that's very close to the camera. If it were not something like that, you would definitely see a downgradation of that black level in the disc, just as you would not see it in mine. That disc would be considerably lighter if it were a very large object far from the camera. That's really the bottom line of that shot.
Okay, well, let's go on to the next photograph, and what are we looking at?
Okay, the one down below it is another shot. This is where the disc is comparatively closer. Again, my same small model, about 3 inches across. Meyer's model. Again, we can see that there's some significant atmospheric hazing in Meyer's shot. A lot less than there would be in mine, of course, but you would still have you can still see a bit of it in the buildings there in the background of my own. You've got a little bit lighter of a tone than you do in, say, the trees. The darkness is lighter because you have distance from the camera lens to those far buildings versus the distance from the lens to the trees. Again, in Meyer's shot, we don't see any atmospheric hazing whatsoever. You don't see any in mine. Essentially, again, my contention is a small model relatively close to the camera. And that's why you're not seeing any of that lightening of the overall craft photograph, is because it's simply just too close to have any sort of atmospheric hazing, and it's too small. Again, if that were a large object far from the camera, the black levels on it would be much, much lower. So that, to me, is one of the big dead giveaways, that you're looking at something that's very close to the camera.
What about this next set of pictures?
The ones below them, that's just two that I picked that allegedly show landed craft or low hovering craft. And essentially, I just want to make the point here that at no point in any photograph that I've seen have you ever seen a shot that didn't have the bottom cropped from the bottom, where we're not looking at something that's actually landed on the ground, but we're looking at something that either could A, be sat on a table, or maybe on any type of thing, or could be sitting on a rock. Bottom line is, we never seem to see this thing make actual contact with the ground so that we get a real sense of perspective of the largeness of this thing. I mean, looking at the top photograph, to me it looks like the thing is probably about anywhere between 13, 14 inches wide. In particular, in just the bottom photograph, you can notice that the middle line of the hull is significantly warped. I don't know what that is evidence of. You know, if this is alleged to be a real craft, then, the bottom line is it's bent. I'm not an expert on alien craft, so I'm not going to say that it wouldn't be that way, but I think that's a little bit odd-looking, considering most of the photographs we see from Meyer are very straight and streamlined things. To me, that looks like something that might have been thrown on a potter's wheel, like, or something like that.
Okay, what about this next set?
Well, the next set is a really interesting part of this whole wedding cake thing, in that You've got a grain can lid that was photographed at Meyer's farm that has identical bands that proceed around the circumference. You have a handle that juts out that's quite small and rounded. And when you look at the wedding cake ship, you note that it's got the same shape. It has the same lines. It has the same angles, the same side profile, and the handle exists in exactly the same spot. Now, you know, my contention is that that's way too damn close to be coincidence. I've always gone from the standpoint that these are most likely small models, and that this would be one of the big smoking guns for me here. If you actually read some of the Meyer material, they at first claimed that these trash urns weren't even made at the time. that these photos were taken. However, Harco, which is the company that manufactures them, claims they've been making them since 1975, so they were around. That, to me, is one of the biggest photographs to examine. When you look at that grain can and you look at the lines, you can count the lines, same number of lines, same placement of a handle. It's just, you know, I truly believe that that's what that is.
Okay, let's move down to the next one.
The next one down just basically shows a push dissolved shot, which means that the darkness or lightness of the photograph was push developed, which means that that was not allowed to fixate too long in the development process. It basically is an attempt to show you how atmospheric hazing can be faked if you don't develop the photograph fully to its full intent. You'll notice that the underside of the disc, which usually is black, if it's push developed in a quick fashion, that can simulate the distance hazing. And I just wanted to show that even though you may think, or folks out there may think, well, now every photograph I see, if it doesn't have that distance hazing, or if it has it, it might be real. Well, this just goes to show you that you can fake distance hazing if you want to. The shot underneath of that is one that I haven't seen too much of out there on the net, but that is a shot of the wedding cake craft, again, up against the tree, which seems to be like a staple of Meyer's photography of these things, is that a lot of times they are into a tree, almost looks like they've crashed into trees. These Palladians love to crash their stuff into trees. But what you're looking at here is a ground shot, or essentially looks like somebody's laying on the ground shooting this shot. And judging from the ratio of how tall the grass may be, now we could say, okay, what if the grass is tall this time of year? If you look at where that tree is meeting that grass, that tree is about 3.5-4 foot tall. So do your math from there. I mean, we can look at the ratio of the grass, we can look at the scale of the grass, and tell that this ship or this craft and this tree are not very far away. Again, your darkness levels are very close. And I think that's one of the more obvious shots.
Okay, let's take a break from the photos for a minute, and let's bring Michael back into this. Now, Michael, do you have comments about any of this?
Of course I have comments. Well, where to begin? When Jeff was talking about the early photographs, and I'm happy to... First, we'll just go to the top of his page again, and I'll try to be brief because I have a page as well to go through. When he shows the clasp, and he said the clasp and the pie pan were the same color and the same material, anybody can look at it and see that the Meyer object that has the writing Turkey UFO is a silver metallic thing, and this is clearly not a silver metallic pie pan. That should be obvious. Number two on that, when you do look at the wedding cake photos, you would see that these little clasps, should that, when you look at the totality of a wedding cake ship, they wouldn't even be visible. And yet those things are quite visible on an object which is certainly not a tiny model. As a matter of fact, when we get to my page, you'll see quite clearly. And when we look at the video of it, you're going to see that it was no model. Because if Jeff is going to say it's a 10-inch model or something, then how are you going to have one of these objects at a distance of 200-300 feet showing up as a 14-foot in diameter object?
Well, let's go to your page.
Okay. Let me also do that, find a way here on this little primitive computer I'm on, and see if we can do that. All right, we can. All right. Let me try to open this up. We'll jump, if you want, we can go, you know, comparison to comparison, which would bring us to the wedding cake ships to start with, and that is down farther down on my page here.
Yeah, it's about 3/4 of the way down.
That's correct. And what you're going to find, then we can go back to the idea of the other things being quote-unquote models, which is an interesting thing to say. When you get to the wedding cake, and I'm still scrolling down to it since... they say I'm on a little bit of a primitive setup here. Okay, you're going to find out that Meyer took 63 photographs, daytime and nighttime, of the wedding cake. Now, the first photograph you see there is Jeff's wedding cake model to the degree that he developed it. Now, with all due respect, it's not even close to, you know, what we have from Meyer, and we certainly don't see it in an environment. We see on the left a gold colored looking wedding cake craft. And when we look at that, we can see a good number of these globes on a lower tier, on a middle tier, and on the top tier, and we see what upon closer examination are small jewel-like settings all the way around it, 100 of them approximately. When I spoke with Lee and Britt Elders, who themselves had trouble with this object when they first saw it, they said this was just the weirdest thing they'd ever seen. But what was clear to them, and what was clear to Wendell, and they even consulted people who worked in metal, was that to have made something like this was a tremendous work of machining. And it is, there is no plastic garbage can lid here. There is a very similar looking rim on it. But when you look at it, you can clearly see this entire thing is metallic, and it's very well machined. Now, as we scroll down and look at the photographs of it, we have a photograph where it is almost completely sitting, the last of the wedding cake shots that are in this segment, we can see almost the entirety of it, which shows a base. Perhaps if that photograph was brightness enhanced, we would see a little more detail of the bottom. But we have another shot that shows that. Actually, there's a number of shots that show the bottom of this, and they are rather complex as well. Nobody in 30 years has come forward to either show us this model, to claim that they know where it is, how it was made, or that they participated in its making. If anybody thinks that a one-armed guy made this, well, these things should be flying all over the place, because two-armed people should be able to knock these out in no time. And so far we've seen that Jeff's attempt, I mean, he's here with us on the radio claiming it's a hoax, and he's got a little pie plate there.
I never said hoax. Nobody can say hoax except for Billy Meyer.
Okay, it's a model. But your own model, and you're a professional, doesn't even come close. And when we take a look at the two photographs of the man here with the box, on an approximate location, very close to where the wedding cake was setting from as best we can figure, while we can see this guy himself is 6 feet tall, and we can see this box, which has got like a, you know, 2 foot or more on a side, we can, common sense and our own eyes tell us that this is not taking up the space that this other object is, of which we, as we've said, there are 63 photos. Now, Jeff also knows, since he's put up 4 or 5 photos, that to take numerous photos of an object and to come off looking really good, that's a lot of setup work. And you'd think then that Billy Meyer must have had an awful lot of time on his one hand. But let's go to the photo right below it. And this is where we start to get into where we slam dunk the nonsense about models. This is an enhanced or brightened photo. Now, in this text that you're seeing here around it, as you will see in the text above in another segment, we have the statements of professors of forestry. Now, let me just ask Jeff a question here. Jeff, if 6 professors of forestry tell us that they are identifying full-size trees, do you give any credibility to that?
Do I give any credibility to them saying that off of pictures?
Yes, that's right.
No,
okay,
because
so
pictures can be misleading to a very large degree.
So the numerous photographs that they were shown at least a half a dozen photographs, they were all misleading to 6 professional forestry experts who identified the species of tree and the size of the tree based on their years and years and years of experience, and knowing that when they teach forestry, they actually don't always have the chance to take everybody out into every field to see every kind of tree. So you know what they do? They show pictures of trees. And guess what? If these trees had been really weird anomalies in these photographs, do you think maybe that 6 professors of forestry might have expressed a doubt or said, I don't know, that's probably a miniature tree? Well, let me help you out here. In every case, they said these are not miniature trees, and they explained why they're not. So if we want to know about that, we slide up farther on the page, and we go up, pardon me, we go up to where we see the 5 or so shots of the tree circling. And it says there the tree's maturity. And Deardorff says in 1985 he showed the photo that best displays the tree trunk, blah, 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 to 2 professors at Oregon State. Now, there's a total of 6 that are reported in my article here. 6 of them. Now, let's look at that first photo. Do you think that's a misleading photo, Jeff? Do you think that that's not clear that that's could be identified by people who are professional, not UFO experts, but forestry experts?
Well, we'll get to my comparison before I say anything about that.
Well, okay, well, I mean, you don't want to say that maybe these...
Oh, I'll say yes. It's definitely deliberately misleading, yes.
Deliberately misleading. So these six forestry experts were in collusion with James Dierdorf or Billy Meyer.
No, I have no idea. I wasn't there to hear what they said.
Well, their findings are reported here. Now, when you look at those photographs where that disc object is shown circling the tree, you're going to want us to believe that that's a model with a miniature tree. Is that right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And reflecting the sky and the tree very nicely. And so as we go down a little farther, and we see that object at all sorts of positions, we see figure two there, which is an enlargement of the tree's trunk. And the tree's trunk gave them further evidence of the tree's maturity because of the nodules on either side of it. Now, of course, when you get yourself a model tree and you show us how you can demonstrate that this is just, you know, a model with a miniature tree, we're going to be interested because we can send those to six forestry experts. But even more, we go down a little farther here and we see a panoramic view of this area in Switzerland where Meyer claims he took the photos. Well, gosh, there's no tree in that first panoramic photo. But what happens when we go down to that detailed segment where the tripod is, that same area and one of the photographs that Meyer took from approximately that distance is overlaid and the tree line lines up and the other part of the landscape lines up and lo and behold, where the tree is, there's a full-size disc and the sky is there and the mountains are where they belong. You know, Billy Meyer is putting to shame George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, according to Jeff Ritzman. This one-armed guy who had nothing else to do but master this type of model making and sophistication is now able to create the illusion of a tree and a craft. Just look at the photo, folks. And, of course, telling me that it's a model tree and that it's a model doesn't mean anything to me because I know, Jeff, that now your next step will be to demonstrate how easy that is. We did notice from your photographs that not one of them, as I said in the very beginning of the show, is next to a tree, let alone a half a dozen of them. Now, if we even go down a little more, we see one frame from a film. Now, we're told that these are models, probably 3 to 15 inches in size. Well, gee, there's one of these models hovering at the top of the screen, but what happens when we go to the next frame down there, which is two or so frames in the film? We see this object at a distance, and we have these films, and this object, which is only supposed to be at the most, what, you tell me, Jeff, 12, 14 inches across? Well, by golly, half of it has dipped behind a hill in the distance, and you don't have the benefit of seeing it right now, Jeff, but it then, after it dips behind the hill, it comes up back up to the center of the screen, and you know what? It's as large as the one in the first frame above, which is about twice as large as the one at the bottom. Now, we go a little lower, and we look at the so-called Hasselbalch photo number 171, and we see photo number 200. Now, James Dierdorf points out to us that the above photo is a blow-up, and that it had been from an electrically scanned negative done by AG in Basel on their Hell chromograph. Now, I am a total idiot when it comes to high-tech stuff and film stuff. I take off my hat to Jeff as being, you know, imaging professional, but I'm afraid I can't take off my hat to Jeff for producing a model that comes even remotely close to either of these craft, which are clearly highly machined, metallic, with dissimilar metals and very careful construction. They're not 3 inches in diameter, and they're not 12 inches in diameter. So let me tell you a little bit more about how we know that. In 1982, when Wendell published his first of two books with over 1,000 total pages of investigative reporting, he said the following. We carried a $400 super lightweight 18-inch diameter model of Pleiadian Variation No. 2, expertly crafted by the special effects laboratory of a major Hollywood studio, to Switzerland, and rigged it in scenes of the original photographs in an attempt to duplicate any of the pictures. We shot it suspended from a long pole on a monofilament line with the same camera that Meyer had used for the original pictures. We shot pictures with the focus on the model and then with the focus on the horizon and then with the model and horizon focus balanced as well as we could. We varied the lens aperture and shutter speed and shot pictures with the eye, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He then says, we did get some interesting photos, all right, but we were unable to successfully balance the focus between the object and the horizon. When we focused on the object 30 to 40 feet away, the horizon was badly out of focus, and vice versa. The object in all the pictures looks like a model at close range to the camera. It reflected the light too brightly, like Jeff's do, and the lines were too distinct. Meyer commented on the fine finish of our model, and we left it with him as a souvenir of our efforts. We've seen that model. It's a far finer 18-inch model than any that have been produced, and we're going to actually show a film of that within the next few months. We have it. And it will become very clear, even to Jeff, that that model, which is a fine one, six times the size of his, is not comparable in any way, shape, or form, and certainly didn't even account for what was used in the films. And Jeff might
Let me ask a question now. This number 200. Mm-hmm. This is a picture of the wedding cake in flight.
No, 200 is not the wedding cake.
That's what it says on your site. That's what it says on the picture. Number 200, colon 8, Mars, M-A-R-Z, 1976.
Yeah, but that's not the wedding cake. The wedding cake is the one with all the globes on it.
Okay, well, what is this one?
This is one of the variations of the craft. There were something like five or six variations.
Okay, well, whatever we call it. Wedding cake variation 2, whatever it is.
It's not a wedding cake, but it's one of the variations.
Okay. One of the things that I notice about this photograph is something that Jeff mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The background, there is hazing. It looks like you're looking through a haze.
Sure.
The craft is exceptionally clear.
You know, did you read the legend below it? It said, and it's the result of the electrically scanned negative done by AG and Basel on their Hell chromograph. If you don't mention any of that, the viewer could easily assume it's a model because its edges are so sharply delineated. So it's a cropping of a blow-up, and that's why it had been enhanced in the examination, and that's why it is that clear. Now, if you go, just for a moment, you go back up the page, so we can start comparing things for clarity, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
If you go up much higher, you're going to come to a place where the first photo under comparing the photos, you have three disks at different angles to each other, and this is taken on a very, very high place, which is traditionally quite windy. If you've ever
This is the photograph that has the tripod in it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, the tripod is less clear and distinct, and the objects... Now, this is a small photograph. Admittedly, there could be problems in making a really good analysis of it based on its size and visibility on the computer, but I think we can agree that the foreground object doesn't have the same crystal clarity to its lines that even the trees in the background do. And we've got the three discs, which appear... to have sunlight glinting off them with dark bottoms, and they are three. Now, again, we are talking about a man with one hand, and just in case anybody wants to say he had invisible helpers, in 30-odd years, none have been discovered, none have come forward, and nobody's mysteriously showed up in Hollywood showing how to do these things.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll continue when we come back. Don't go away. It just gets better and better. That's because you're at the Kevin Smith Show. We'll be back.
Cities that reach the sky, and it's all going to end in the blink of an eye. So frightening, you'll wish it wasn't real.
Survival is going to be everybody's priority.
The Horizon Project. Order now at thehorizonproject.com or call toll free 866-607-8439.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
must inform you that Kevin Smith has lost his mind. Business owners and advertising executives take advantage of Kevin's temporary nutty frame of mind. He is willing to invest $2,550 in you to introduce you to the very high value of advertising on The Kevin Smith Show. For details, email advertising@kevinsmithshow.com and just say, "Send me the package." We think he's gone nuts, but why not benefit from it?
Now's the perfect time to switch to Dish Network. Make the move today and get 100% digital TV for only $19.99 a month. Free two-room DVR upgrade, free high-def receiver upgrade, number one in the U.S. with 29 high-definition channels, and a free movie package for 3 months. Choose from Starz, Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Go to kevinsmithshow.com right now and click on the banner for Dish Network.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening are Michael Horn and Jeff Richmond. And we're talking about the Billy Meier case. Gentlemen, the phones are just, the lights are lighting up. Let's take a telephone call and get the audience involved. I know we've got tons and tons of stuff that we still need to cover, and maybe we can get some of it, maybe we can get all of it, and maybe not. But we'll get as much as we can. But let's go to the telephone and see what the audience has on their mind for this evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from? Oh, I see. It's called a dial tone. All right. 1-800-289-1092. See, I was really trying to get the audience in there, and we couldn't do it. Okay, we'll try that again in just a moment. Basically, what this boils down to is, so far, is one's interpretation of photographs. Now, I'm not a photographic expert by any stretch of the imagination. What interests me, though, is how can we do analysis without negatives? And Michael, you have the floor. I'll let you have the floor. How can we do analysis without negatives?
Well, I'll have to answer it this way. Meier shot, from what I understand, he shot a lot of stuff on positives, not negatives. But it just so happens that I opened the book on the investigation, and what I want to say here is we have to understand that a very, very lengthy and expensive investigation was done. And I'm going to invite people who are interested to read the free analysis of it so people have an idea of the level of professionalism that was actually involved and the quality of equipment. But one of the things that stood out for me in this book, we've spoken about Marcel Vogel only briefly because he'd been attacked by a number of skeptics. They said, well, he didn't really have patents, blah, blah. He was a genius who was at IBM. He held 32 different patents, and though he was mainly involved in this case examining the metals, I want you to understand something that was a breakthrough in the analysis on the photographs that came from him. And I have to read it, I'm sorry, but I have no other way of conveying it. He was looking at one of the color photographs of the spacecraft allegedly 200 yards away over a grassy field, and he thought of another test for photographic validity. He suggested illuminating the original transparency or negative film from beneath with a red light and then rephotographing the picture on infrared film. He thought that if there was any energy of any kind aboard the object, that is like light, heat, combustion, etc., that the object would have to radiate something, perhaps even in the non-visible range or as a harmonic which might be detectable. And here's the kicker. Performing this experiment, and Stephen says, we discovered a remarkable effect. There appears to be an energy path from the object to the camera, very much like moonbeams on water, which is reflected from certain grass blades at certain angles. This effect could not be produced by models unless they were made energy radiant, and then we would have the problem of having to take the model the right distance away to make the track, and then having to make the model big enough for the picture until we are back to the requirement for a full-size model a long distance away again. New discoveries in the area of crystal resonance in film, emulsion crystals responding in a more subtle way to harmonics of the frequencies for which they were designed, offer whole new avenues of research, blah, blah, blah. They went to enormous lengths. There were parameters here in place that some of the testing equipment was developed for it. And that
okay,
was
well, let me make sure that I understand the importance mm-hmm. or the weight of what you've said. Apparently, this process that Marcel Vogel came up with is a way to photograph whether or not this thing was emitting energy. Is that correct?
That appears to be what they're saying right there.
Okay, Jeff?
Yes.
Your turn. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, I go back again to the original report in which they're talking about, I'm trying to find it here while I'm speaking. Actually, they go and say that the computers were to do the analysis were provided by De Anza Corporation. Well, an employee of De Anza named Ken Dinwiddie went on the record some years ago, and he commented on the on what occurred at his place as far as the analysis of these photographs went. He says they came to De Anza under the pretext of wanting to buy our equipment. We demonstrated it, and they snapped some pictures and left. We made no data interpretations whatsoever. The captions which appear in the Meyer book under each photo, when he was asked, are they correct, Dinwiddie said, those are their interpretations, not ours. Nothing we did would have defined what those results meant. When he was shown a particular one that I think Michael might be talking about, it's called a thermogram, a color density separation. Low-frequency properties of light slash time of day are correct. Light values on the ground are correct, reflected in the bottom. Eliminates double exposures and paste-ups. Dinwiddie said about that, no, we put those colors in the photo. Jim Dilatoso said, can you make the bottom of the object appear to reflect the ground below? I said yes, and we performed the operations that they asked for. So right there, you've got a man that works for De Anza stating publicly that they altered the data before it was ever shown to the public and possibly ever shown to any of the quote-unquote experts.
Okay, Michael, what about that?
I can address that.
Go ahead.
One thing that I didn't post, I actually had a response from Wendell Stevens on that. It's a lengthy one, and I'll actually send it to you, Kevin. I'll send it to Jeff. I have no problem with it. I didn't post it because it wasn't particularly kind to Mr. Dinwiddie. I'm sorry, I don't know how spelling isn't in front of me, but I will tell you the following. First of all, this does not impugn what we just read from Marcel Vogel, that analysis with Vogel, because he was the one who came up with that process. Second of all, I can tell you right now that when I asked Wendell about this some time ago, he said that there were processes in place that were quite legitimate to enhance or to create a enhancement of what existed in terms of color for the sake of that presentation, that it was not false color being put in. And I will get an exact statement from him. But since Jeff brought it up, why don't we just go right here to something that was said in terms of the analysis that was done at Poway Design Technology of Poway, California, for conventional photogrammetric and computer analysis similar to the method used by Ground Saucer Watch, which is a group that's very skeptical and all. So first of all, they examine the image field visually and microscopically, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to read you all, but I will tell you that they found that it was not a double exposure, not a photo paste-up, or a model at short range suspended on a string, and nothing was found to suggest a hoax. And Kodak of Geneva confirmed the accuracy of those findings of Design Technology. And so Design Technology concluded that the object in the photograph must have been a large object photographed some distance from the camera. And at the time of this, Design Technology held contracts with NASA, JPL, and the U.S. Navy, and also did subcontract work for General Dynamics Engineering. We have in the preliminary investigation and the photo analysis enough positive documentation to choke a horse on it. You can say that, well, some third-party guy now 20 years later says, well, they told me to do this. How is it in all this time that everything's been out there that these people did not sue or claim that it was false? And we only have two people, but let's say three at the most here, that are hedging somewhat. And we can prove, by virtue of the investigation and the naming of the laboratories involved, that there was no fraud in this. Everybody's saying these are large objects. And when we look at the photograph that I was just about to show everyone on the page with the tree branch in front and the three discs, this is the larger of the two photos on that page, guys. This is not just a photograph. This is a frame from a film. And in this film, you see these three objects hovering and each one moving at a slightly different pulse up and down. Then two of the objects, the ones on either side of the larger craft, suddenly disappear from the film while the other one remains exactly where it is. Now, when people look at that film and they again say we're on the mountaintop in Switzerland with a one-armed man and he now has three objects that he's filming, something in terms of common sense has to set in if we human beings are going to make it into the, you know, next 10 years here. If we cannot discern that this is something that's quote-unquote real and has not been duplicated, I have not yet seen Jeff dangle me three models with one hand. We know Meyer only had one, can't fake that, and film them and then have two of them disappear and one remain. So we have a preponderance, and this is the easy part of the case, the physical evidence.
Okay, well, let's get Jeff's remarks
sure.
on that.
Yeah, I think the funny thing that Michael keeps putting forth is we're talking about a one-armed man, and it's not like a one-armed man can't pull off a lot. This is true. But, you know, I think the funny part is that it's constantly touted that there's never been anyone who has come forward to say that they were an accomplice. That wholly doesn't mean that one does not exist. I hate to tell everyone that. You know, there is, if you watch the video that he shot of the wedding cake craft around the tree, where it zooms in on this tree, you'll notice that there's two voices on there.
Right.
You can actually see Meyer talking. The other one I'm not sure exactly what the alien name is, but it's roundabout claim that this is the Pelagiarin on the ground that's speaking. I mean, you know, we can go off on our tangents of the ray gun shots which show female. About all these other shots.
Yeah, but Jeff, I agree with Michael at this point of let's stay with this photo.
I don't have a problem doing that. But
Jeff just said
we have to make the... excuse me, I am talking. I have to make the point, though, that you do have evidence, however light it may be, that there are other people involved in this. And just because one has not come forward is wholly not evidence that there doesn't exist to be one.
And it doesn't
that is
mean
the
there
biggest
isn't an elephant.
And one of the biggest things this whole thing that I've tried to bring up here, at least tonight, in the little bit of time I've got to speak, is that, again, there is no distant hazing on these objects. That is, I question the authority of anyone who does not readily see that. That is a very, very common thing for judging distance of an object in open air.
Okay, let me break in. I have a question for Michael, but let me just state for the record that, Jeff, you've had the same amount of time as Michael. Both of you have had the same amount, and we want to keep it that way. But, Michael, I have a question about this photograph. And the question I have about this photograph is in the upper right-hand corner, there are some dark areas. Is that a tree?
It's a tree branch.
Okay.
That's correct. And let me, if I may, answer what Jeff just said. It doesn't accord with any system of logic that I know of to say that there must be people, even though we haven't found them. It's like well, we could say there must be elephants in the alpha.
I didn't say there must be. I said there could be. And
okay,
you saying that no one has come forward cannot negate the possibility that they exist.
Let me negate the possibility for you in this way. The investigation was done on site for about 6 to 8 years. During the time that the investigators were present, Meyer routinely came back with a camera full of photographs of the ships. If you had actually read the information on the investigation, if you'd spoken with Wendell Stevens or Lee or Britt Elders, if you'd actually ever traveled to Switzerland yourself and walked the land, and you'd realize that all of the digging around for accomplices yielded nothing, and that Lee and Britt Elders are professional private investigators. And
did anybody ever go with Billy Meyer on a photo session of these craft?
Actually, yes. And
did anyone go with him that was not a member of FIGU or the group there?
Don't know that that was the case.
Okay,
so,
then you cannot rule out that there were accomplices on the scene.
Well, it
okay, well, let me cut to the chase on this.
Yeah.
First, it's an established fact, I think both of you would agree, that no one has come forward. Now, I am a professional investigator, and I've spent years doing it. The fact that no one has doesn't mean that no one exists. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that someone does. There is the possibility that there's someone, and I mean, that's always a possibility. And so, you know, really, for a professional investigator, after all this length of time, it's a moot point. Nobody has come forward, you know, there could be somebody, but if so, they're keeping their mouth shut. And so,
yeah,
therefore, you're at a dead end as an investigator on that issue.
There's one other thing, Kevin, and that is that at the time that this was going on, actually, there were not a lot of people around Meyer. There were maybe, I don't know, 20 or so people, 17 people took lie detector tests, stress analysis, you know, at the time. I mean, we can always say, well, it's not good enough to do this, it's not good enough to do that, but every available tool to try to detect fraud or complicity was not only used, but we're talking about an area in Switzerland where the entire village consists of 16 homes. Everybody knows everybody.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hardcastle.
This is Jason Martell, researcher into the ancient astronaut theory.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Humans have built a glorious civilization. We have spanned the globe with cities that reach the sky. And it's all going to end in the blink of an eye. So frightening, you'll wish it wasn't real.
Survival is going to be everybody's priority.
The Horizon Project. Order now at thehorizonproject.com or call toll free 866-607-8439.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. You know, for quite some time, I have been talking with you about the phenomenal resort accommodations, the Bath Street Apartments, in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. Now it's time for you to see for yourself. Go to kevinsmithshow.com and click the Bath Street banner at the top of the page and see for yourself why Bath Street Apartments should be your next vacation destination. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
call The Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. It's two sides of the issue. Billy Myers, one of the most famous of the UFO cases in existence. And we've got two very knowledgeable gentlemen with us tonight, Michael Horn and Jeff Ritzman. And we're talking about the Billy Myers case from two different perspectives. As we went away for break, and we had to do that, because those happen, breaks happen. When we went away, I had just made the point that for a professional investigator, after all of this time, it is a moot point as to whether such a person exists, someone who helped him to hoax all of this. The reason is you're at an investigative dead end. I do think, though, Michael made the point, that I think you said 17 of these people have taken lie detector tests, Michael. Is that right?
Correct, including Meyer, and they all passed 100%, telling the truth and verifying and validating that indeed Meyer is having the contacts. They have seen, some of them have seen the ships themselves, some had photographed the ships, and that there was no falsification going on. They're just simple people.
Okay, would you concede, though, from at least a hypothetical investigator's point of view, a hypothetical, that the absence of someone coming forward would not necessarily preclude there being someone?
Well, again, we could say that there could be elephants in the Alps, but we look, as you know, as an investigator, you look for motive. And human beings have
motive. No. Motive you never look for.
Well, when you go to trial, you try to find out motive, opportunity.
No, that's only television. Motive doesn't matter. Evidence matters. And let me tell you why. Let me explain. The reason motive doesn't matter is because people do stuff without a reason sometimes. And what we look at is, does the evidence say they did it? Motive doesn't matter. If the evidence says you did a crime, you did it. Why you did it? Tell that to Jesus.
Well, it's fine. What I would say is this, that none of the people who, and we have interviewed some of the same people who've been there for 30 years. We've recorded them all in film. Nobody has changed their story in 30 years. And when I use the word motive, nobody's gotten rich off of this. There are reasons people do things, and so far it doesn't accord with anything we know.
Okay. We've only got 6 minutes left in this show, and gosh, this has gone by fast. There's a whole lot more evidence that I've looked at this stuff on both sides. Michael, I've spent a lot of time over at your site looking at your stuff. Jeff, I spent a lot of time looking at those photographs, and I wish we could get to it all. But let me do this. Let me give you each. We now have 6 minutes. So let me give you each two and a half minutes to sort of sum up your position. And Jeff, the floor is yours.
Well, I think we have to warn another show for this, because I didn't get to present nearly as much or talk nearly as much as I'd like to here tonight about this. But I think I'm just going to direct people towards the page you put up of my photographs, especially the comparison between the two trees. From July 9 in 75 and April 3rd in 81. And I want to point out there that those two trees, which I do contend is a miniature type tree, share incredibly non-natural symmetry with each other, and that's in two different locations. There is way more than enough matching points to those two trees to something that you can't exactly ascribe to nature there. I think that really says it all as far as that tree goes. And personally, when it comes to a photographic standpoint, you could show a model of a tree to a forestry expert. Yeah, they can be fooled. It's absolutely 100% possible. If they're looking at what they believe is a full-size tree, they're going to think it's a full-sized tree. There's no deceptive intent there on their part. They just don't know what they're looking at as far as the base data that they're taking into consideration. They're being told it's a full-sized tree. You know, from that standpoint, there's a lack of acknowledgement of the points I'm bringing up, and I find that to be pretty standard fare when it comes to this case. They basically want to dance circles around the very most basic points that are brought up and go on off on a lot of tangents that we've heard tonight.
So from your point of view, there's absolutely no doubt in your mind these photographs are fakes.
Oh, absolutely no doubt in my mind.
Okay, Michael, you got
sure.
your 2.5.
Thank you. Well, let's address in reverse order. Jeff now claims, in effect, to be an expert on trees and forestry, whereas he said before that the forestry experts can't identify a tree. And now he then goes back and says that they could be fooled and convinced by somebody that these are real trees. Their criteria were actually very simple. They could identify pruning marks and nodules, and there are no miniature trees that are made that way. We've never seen any. There's no models like this. And to photograph such and make it look realistic, well, we're just waiting for Jeff to do it. As far as Jeff's photographs are concerned, his attempts to duplicate, I've always said they were nice little shots, but unfortunately his ship, because it's so small, is too close to the camera, so we clearly see the same kind of quality of between the ship and the tree branches. We see that there are no photos, such as Meyer produced 30-some years ago, of the ships nestled right in trees all around big trees. There's no multiple UFO shots. Meyer has them not only in photograph but in film. We have no sequence shots. Meyer has 32, a roll of 32 of the UFOs traveling across the sky. He's got sometimes up to 3 and 4 of them. So Jeff has produced no films and no video. We have industry professionals, aerospace industry experts such as I just read from Design Technology that have government contracts, JPL, the rest, and they're saying these are not hoaxes, they're not models. And it does come down then, if we want to go back to it, 120 witnesses, 5 other photographers, and volumes of information that we haven't even touched upon while we're still dealing with the evidence, fair enough. But let's also say 6 forestry experts, folks, said those are full-size mature trees. And whatever the object may be, it is not a model. It's a full-size, 21-foot in diameter model. From here on, people will have to make up their own mind, ask the tough questions, you know, question me, question Jeff, what have you. It's up to each of us to draw our own conclusion. I only ask that people think logically and also say, could this one-armed man be such a genius in 30 different disciplines that in 1964 to 78, he could produce physical evidence that remains irreproducible to this day.
I want to thank both of you gentlemen for being with me tonight. You have both provided very thought-provoking information from 2 different points of view, and I appreciate that. You know, I think it's important for people to hear all sides of an issue. And I think it's very important for us to hear it in order for us to be able to make up our own minds. And I think it's a great thing that both of you were willing to come on tonight and participate in this. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as we close the show. Ladies and gentlemen, where else are you going to find it, huh? Only here at the Kevin Smith Show. And, you know, I told you this was going to be a hot one, and it is. And yet, It was hot, but with it was very civil. That's the way national conversations and international conversations are supposed to happen. Gentlemen, thanks for that, and I hope we can get both of you back to go further into the evidence at a future date. Would you be willing to come back?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's one of you.
No, absolutely.
Okay, great. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back, all right? We'll be back on Monday with another great version of the Kevin Smith Show. I'll see you then. Until then, so long, everybody.
Join the Rank Rats. Be sure to vote for Kevin Smith Show podcast. The link is on the KevinSmithShow.com website. And thanks for your help.